Welcome to the Magic Potion Podcast, where a sprinkle and a dash can enhance your class. Listen to learn about tools, techniques, and stories from educators on ways to improve your lessons, create a positive culture, and much more. I'm your host, Kevin Reinemann, and now it's time to make it happen. Hello and welcome everyone to episode 42 of the Magic Potion EDU podcast. I am so pleased and excited to have my special guest today, Chris Woods. You may know him as Daily STEM from the STEM Everyday podcast, as well as the new book, Daily STEM. So happy to have Chris on. We've been chatting for a while. We've got some great things to talk to you about today, including some things about remote learning and awesome things about STEM in general, as well as taking a spin on that magic potion wheel. So that'll be fun. So Chris, could you please introduce yourself, let the audience know your background in education, who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kevin. I'm so happy to be on the podcast with you today. And I've been a high school math teacher for 20 plus years in Michigan. And I really love trying to make that math classroom, that math content, that curriculum just relevant and accessible for all of my students, not just the really smart kids or just even just every single kid. And so over the years, I've decided that, hey, all these things that I'm doing in my classroom to make my math content relevant, I know that it can be helpful for other educators. So I started sharing things on social media at Daily STEM. And then just things kind of go from there. As you start sharing ideas, educators say, wow, these are great ideas. You know, help me out some more. And I just love helping people because that means more kids are getting great, relevant education every day.
Absolutely. I love watching what you do because it's bringing that math class to real life, making it sorry about that, yep. Folks. We are recording from home. Mm-hmm. And of course, as soon as we started, my little man, my little five-year-old just runs up and says, I need help with something. Yeah. So hold on. Okay. And here's a prime example of the change in technology from our generation to the current generation. He needed help because Dora wasn't on.
Oh.
And I thought maybe he had changed the channel, and no, it was a commercial.
Oh. Commercial. What are those, Kevin?
Exactly. These kids do not understand those and what it was like to try and squeeze a bathroom break into that 3 minutes you had in your 30-minute episode back in the day.
Right.
Oh, man. So, yes, what I love about following you on Twitter is that you bring math class to real life, put it applicable so that it's not just the constant question of, why do I need to know this?
Yeah. Yeah, kids love that question, right? When are we ever going to use this anyway? That's what it's all about. We got to try to find ways to make it relevant for kids. And if we don't, they're going to just keep asking that question. We're going to get frustrated. So,
yeah, and it's the same kind of like, oddly enough, when I'm working with teachers for ed tech integration type things and pre-service teachers, mm-hmm. I get the same question with, how am I going to use technology in my math class? So it's like everything hinges upon math here.
Yeah. Math is really key and vital to so many different subject and content areas, but it's also part of so many types of jobs and careers. And that's another aspect that I'm really seeing as a little bit that is like that next step that we can take as we start thinking about STEM education in our classrooms and in our schools and communities is really saying, how can we integrate and connect STEM to not just the jobs that we talk about are going to happen in the future, but those jobs that are even being transformed and changed today.
Yeah. And there's one that I didn't really understand a few years ago. I was asking some students, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And a few of them were like, I want to be a YouTuber.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's not a legitimate thing. Like, what are you even talking about? And then lo and behold, here comes my five-year-old who, when he was two, he fell in love with the YouTube character Blippi. Do you happen to know Blippi?
I don't have a two-year-old or a five-year-old at home, Kevin, right now. So I don't know Blippi.
Okay. Well, if you want to imagine like Barney the Dinosaur or Sesame Street, or you know, those things that were big when we were younger. Mm-hmm. Blippi is a gentleman that went into the Air Force, and his story goes on to, he was hanging out at his sister's house, mm-hmm. and he was watching his, it was either niece or nephew, watching things on YouTube on the iPad, and there was nothing good. The kid was just watching tractors or watching random farm stuff, mm-hmm. and it was just construction equipment. There was no learning involved. It was just watching these machines.
Right.
So he saw an opportunity. He saw, why can't I make this educational? Mm-hmm. If the kids are going to be sitting there and watching it, why can't we do that?
Yeah.
So he applied his knowledge and skills from what he learned in film school to start producing. And lo and behold, now he has a net worth of something like $400 million. So, and believe me, there was math along the way, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
With figuring out the algorithms and what type to post, where to post to, and all that type of stuff. So that's one of those careers I point to, like, that's a legitimate thing. You can make real money doing that. And I never would have imagined. It's basically right. They've made being a TV star accessible to anybody in the world that
Think about the fact, Kevin, that every one of our students has a video camera in their pocket, pretty much.
Oh yeah.
And they can pull it out and they can film stuff just as quality or better quality than movies of 20, you know, certainly 30 years ago. And,
oh yeah.
And they can, in an instant, they can share whatever they've created with the world. And not only is that, you know, something to, you know, be a little bit cautious of as we teach kids about digital citizenship and really think about what's the best way to be thinking about these things that are out there forever. But also it's incredibly powerful and empowering that they can tell a story, tell the things that impassion them. And however we can find ways to bring that in the classroom, hey, that's great.
Oh, for sure. There's always that little bit of, we got to be careful. Mm-hmm. But there's also that, well, if we do this right, we can do big things. Yeah. So we have to build that empathy and everything going on there. Mm-hmm. So to get back to STEM, you know, your name is Daily STEM. Mm-hmm. We have a STEM Everyday podcast. So I'm going to ask the question, is it STEM? Is it STEAM? Is it STREAM? Does it really matter to you?
You know, Kevin, to me, it doesn't matter. And I love that question. So many people do ask me that question, Kevin, because a lot of people sometimes say, well, I know we've moved on to STEAM. Or, you know, are you leaving the arts out when you just say STEM? And to be honest, as I've grown up, I've always naturally seen the artistic aspects in every aspect of STEM. If you look at a rose growing, you know, you can't separate the science from the beauty of it. They're both there. If you take away how the rose grows or what it looks like and smells like, you don't have a rose anymore. You inherently have both of those things. You know, sometimes I'll use the STEAM acronym if I want to especially highlight something that's you know, this project, this resource has definitely got the artistic aspect to it. Then I'll throw out the STEAM acronym. But for the most part, I just want people to realize that more than anything, whether you call it STEM, STEAM, making, project-based learning, design thinking, anything you want to call it, it's really just about making education relevant for kids. It's about taking that stuff out there in the world and bringing it into your classroom.
Oh, I love that. I love that you use the word relevant with it. That's something that, you know, I don't always focus on myself. Like, I try to make things being real world applicable and everything with the classes that I'm teaching. Mm-hmm. But I don't think to use the word relevant. So I like that. I'm going to put that in my back pocket.
On there. Well, if we're not making relevant stuff, then we're just making, you know, fake story problems, which is, you know, just as bad as fake anything. So
Billy buys 5 watermelons and exactly. Susie buys
kids see through that stuff so quickly. Yeah. And if we're not giving them a real relevant, even when a lot of textbook companies or a lot of even some resources, they try to be relevant, but sometimes it's, you know, kids can see through that veneer, you know, it's got just that veneer of it, of being relevant. The kids want something real. And if we can find ways to do it, whether it's just like, we just bought a bird feeder the other day and I'm just watching that thing every day as more and more birds come to it. And I'm imagining, okay, so I bought this bag. How soon is that bag going to run out? Well, I could figure that out by figuring out how much goes in to that bird feeder each time, how long it takes, how much it goes down per day. I'm already thinking of great story problems and constant rates and slope intercept form and all those types of things that I can have my students calculate. And then I'm thinking, well, if they don't have a bird feeder of their own, they could build one out of a water bottle and something else, you know. Then you got prototyping but it's all just right there. We just got to be able to just start noticing it and making it relevant.
Wow. Wow. All from looking at a bird feeder. And there you go. Yeah. You just moved on to a full week-long project that's integrating a whole bunch of different stuff going on there.
Yeah.
So when I'm thinking about STEM, mm-hmm. STEAM, STREAM, mm-hmm. For those in private schools that bring in religion into it, there's also for a while there, I'm sure it's still out there, STEM with a second M for a medical push. Mm-hmm. Everywhere I look at them, it's all about integrating multiple disciplines inside of one project,
right,
is what it boils down to for me. So I'm the same way. I don't call it whatever you want. It's interdisciplinary learning. Mm-hmm. And when you add in you talking about the relevancy, that really brings it home. Mm-hmm. And then you talk about this wanting to do slope intercept form, rocking that y equals mx plus b there. I'm picturing dropping it all into a spreadsheet and having it do on a graph for you. So there's the tech side.
Exactly.
Tech side of me bringing it in for computer.
Yeah.
Class there.
Yep. And in past years, I've had my students predict how much snow we're going to get each month, or you could have them predict how much rain you're going to get each month and find on a local website or weather.com or, you know, wherever, where those totals are. And you could have all the kids ahead of time, put it into a Google sheet. And then you can find the average that all of your kids guessed. And there's a good chance that your average is going to be pretty close to, you know, the averages that it usually is or how much it's going to be. Then you can bring in some of that probability, that wisdom of crowds, which is kind of a fun aspect. Yeah. to try. There's so many things and technology makes so many things possible.
So this makes things a little bit different for you. You just had a big move this past summer, didn't you? Mm-hmm. You went from Northern, were you in the, what do they call it? The UP?
Yeah. The Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Yep.
And now you're down. You almost made it to the great state of Ohio. So close, but you wound up, at least you're in Southern Michigan now.
Yeah.
So how big of a change with snow is that going to be for you?
Well, we used to get 250 inches of snow per winter in our former location. And, right now it's still green grass and it's December 21st. So my wife isn't complaining. My wife was, probably the biggest advocate of the move. Me, I'm an educator. So, you know, wherever I go, there's kids and I love being able to impact kids. And so first of all, this move, I mean, it's really tough for any of us as educators if we leave a particular school that we're at, because we've built the relationships with the kids that we teach and their families often and the community. And to start in a new school, it's almost like you got to learn all the new technologies that your new district uses. Like, you know, the previous school district used Schoology, and here we're using Google Classroom, and so many of those types of things. So you've got all those aspects, but at the same time, there's still kids there, and you got to learn the kids. But it's still an incredible opportunity to be able to meet some new kids and touch lives in a whole different place, and I'm really excited about it.
And really, the STEM side of things hasn't changed for you. Well, maybe your prediction is a little bit lower now.
Right.
But, so you're so good at being able to look at something and just go, oh, I can go this way, this way, and this way. Mm-hmm. What kind of advice would you give to somebody that's wanting to have their brain operate the way yours does with looking at something and boom, here's how you do STEM right off the bat?
Yeah. Well, Kevin, it didn't start overnight. I mean, it's a process. It's just, it takes getting used to, much like every teacher has maybe their subject, their jam, whatever it is that they really connect to it. And, you know, maybe a teacher that really likes reading, you know, fiction books. So they'll spot all the great, and they're always looking for new children's books for kids or books that would meet chapter books for their age group or whatever. If you want to add some STEM to your classroom, you're not going to instantly, you know, flip a switch and say, okay, you know, here's the magic potion. Now we're a STEM class. It really takes practice. We're going to do a project today, kids. And I saw this project and we're going to do it. We're going to see if it works, and maybe it works and maybe it doesn't, but you learn something from that. So then the next time you try a project, you say, hey, kids, I saw this project, but this time we're going to tweak it a little bit. I think we can do it a little bit different because it's going to make it even more relevant to what we're doing recently in our class. And then pretty soon, after you start doing more and more things like that, then you start realizing, hey, I can make my own. I can just notice things like my bird feeder in the backyard, and we can bring that in and turn that into a project, a challenge. But it really does. It takes time and it takes practice, much like anything, much like our kids learning a new subject. But if you want to try adding some STEM to your classroom, just try. Just try a project that you find on social media or on a website. You know, just try.
Look down at those 2 feet in front of you.
Yeah.
Just jump right in with it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're not gonna be an expert swimmer right away. You're not gonna be in the Olympics, you know. But you're gonna at least doggy paddle.
And the first few times it probably will stink, but just paddle through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So well, I have a feeling that my next question kind of answers that one as well. And that is, you just wrote and published a book with Codebreaker, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So could you tell us a little bit about the book, what the process looks like, where we can pick our own copy up of it at?
Yeah. Well, thanks, Kevin. It's called Daily STEM. It's available on Amazon. It's, I'm really happy. I'm really excited. The reason I wrote it isn't because I wanted to be rich or famous or anything like that. That's honestly why an educator should not write a book. An educator should write a book because they have a story to tell, because they have advice and expertise that they can offer other teachers. And maybe it's not even writing a book. Maybe it's just writing a blog or being a guest on somebody's podcast, or even just reaching out to the teachers in your own school on a PD day or whatever. But you've all got something that you can do and share to help another educator be a better educator. Well, so many educators were asking me questions about how do I do STEM? You know, a lot of these questions you've been asking me, Kevin, how do you see STEM? You know, how do I connect STEM to literacy? What's the difference between STEM and STEAM? Or how do I get the families at home doing STEM with their kids? How do we turn our school into a STEM school? And all these questions I felt like needed an answer from a very practical, not a lofty textbook kind of answer, but just a real practical read-through stories, helpful suggestions, ideas kind of format. And that's what I wrote. So, I mean, and it's a hard thing to do because it's extra time. You kind of start writing in a Google Doc and then you set it aside and then you come back to it a couple months later and you try some more. And eventually you get to this point where you feel like it's pretty good. And then you share it with the editor and they're like, oh, we got to change this, or, oh, this is bad. And you share it with some friends to read over and they're like, oh, you definitely got to change this part, or this could be so much better. And by the time that you're done with it, it's really pretty incredible. The ability to be able to hold in your hands a book that you've made is much like I think every kid should feel like when they've completed a project. You know, they should say, wow, I made this. This is out of me. This is what's important and personal and passionate of mine. It's not just, and just like a kid isn't, we really don't want them to create that project and then, okay, I turned it in and I got a grade and now I'm done with it. You know, when you finish a book as an educator, you get to share that book with other people. You get to say, you know, hey, read through it. What did you think? What ideas did it spark? And it starts so many other conversations. So that's all that process is tough, but it's been so worth it.
Something really struck out to me there while you were talking. You could feel the passion in your voice about what you've done there.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, you know, sometimes we lose with our students, and mm-hmm. that's, you have to let their passions shine through. Going back to your making things relevant to them.
Yeah, yeah.
If a kid wants to do something on pop culture that's important to them,
yeah,
that's going to be the number one key for engagement with that student probably. If they're passionate about it, let it roll. Let something find a way to make that work in your classroom content.
Yeah.
It may be tough, but, you know, maybe you're doing world history. Maybe we're talking about World War II and the kid loves Among Us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Take your world leaders during the Axis and allies and have them play Among Us against each other and tell a story about it.
There you go. Wow, yeah, there's
kind of fun.
There's so many opportunities, and like you said, Kevin, it really is all about, for me, it's all about the kids. It's not, STEM education isn't about the kits that we buy, the robots and the rockets. It's really about just creating a STEM culture, a way of seeing the world and realizing that everything we do has relevance from a classroom to the world and from the world back into our classroom. That's what it's all about. And however we can make it practical and kind of cut through some of the, standards are important, right? Curriculum is important. Content is important. But if we get those kids doing, you know, the creativity, critical thinking, those four C's of education, they're going to learn the content and curriculum. You know, those four C's are how we get those two C's of content and curriculum into the kids' minds and hearts.
Oh, for sure. I have always, I've been the techie guy, so I tend to look at the lens through educational technology and getting that connection that way. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice to feed back and forth with somebody who's focused specifically on the math side of things.
Yeah.
And also, I want to take this time to publicly thank you, because during the COVID time, if folks listening were following you and I on Twitter, mm-hmm. We had a unintentional collaboration, I guess you should say. Mm-hmm. Could say I was looking for projects to do with my technology students, and I wanted to not just give them, okay, sit and do this type things.
Right.
And I wound up on dailystem.org/resources. Mm-hmm. I can just rail that one off because I was spending so much time there. Yeah. But Chris has these fantastic PDFs that are all these activities that anyone could really do around their house, mm-hmm. with the families or students by themselves. Yep. So I took those activities, found ones that would be, really quick to do, some that might take a little bit while or have some more thinking, and I broke them up into activity choice boards. So some were worth one, some were worth two, some were worth 5 points. And each week during COVID quarantine time, when we were shut down here in Ohio, it was, okay, kids, here's your three activity choice boards. You need to complete 5 points worth by the end of the week. Ready, set, here you go.
Yeah.
And the students loved it. I had very few that were not engaged in that classroom content. And it was just a simple do it, send me a picture, talk about what you thought about it type thing. And so thank you for putting together those PDFs. They are phenomenal.
Yeah, Kevin, it's really all about just so many educators and families alike need simple ideas. And if we can just give them simple things like, hey, find some stuff in your house and make a indoor mini golf course. Kids can be creative. All we got to do is just turn them loose and almost just like give them a little push in the right direction. And then, whether that's in a classroom or at home, giving them that freedom to try something and get through the failing and then trying it again and making something work. And then just enjoying the product, the thing that they've made, and then to be able to make it 2.0, make it 2.1, make it 3.0. That's what we really want from all of our kids. And so many educators and so many parents just need a little bit of confidence, some realizing that, hey, if we just haven't played a card game, if we haven't played Battleship, we're learning math, we're graphing coordinates. That's what Battleship is all about. There's so many things that we can do with our kids, with our families, to just get them over that hump. We tell them to read together. Let's tell them to do STEM together.
Perfect. Why not? Yeah. I mean, I was never a big reader myself. And then I stumbled onto Teach Like a Pirate by Dave Burgess. Mm-hmm. And then I came to the realization that it wasn't that I didn't like to read. It's that I wasn't reading material that was relevant to me. Here we go back to relevancy, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So then after that, now I find myself reading, I don't know, maybe 2 to 3 books a year compared to one book over 35 years of my life. So I'd say that's a pretty good turnaround there.
There's always so many ideas out there. It's just a matter of, looking and finding, and sometimes it's wading through some of the ideas that maybe don't work so well in our classroom and just trying something that does.
Awesome. Well, as I look through here, I don't know if you're ready for this. Are you ready for this? Are you ready to take a spin on the wheel here?
I'm ready to spin that wheel. I feel like it's The Price is Right and Bob Barker's inviting me up there with his little microphone on a stick.
Oh, God rest his soul. I miss him.
And don't forget, forget to control the pet population. Have your pets right. Right. We could all recite all of his lines. So.
Oh yeah, so many years.
And actually, that show. Side note, that's great probability. There's so many different things in that. That's you know.
Oh, and then you have the Netflix show that was all based upon that, and how the guy was documenting all of the prices on all of the prizes over the course of a few years and was able to recite it from memory when he got onto the show and was able to get the perfect, or he helped somebody get the perfect bid by shouting it out from in the audience.
That's awesome.
I think it's called The Perfect Bid. yeah, that didn't go over well with them though. They didn't particularly care for that, but more power to him if he's going to document all that and memorize it.
There we go. All right, I'm ready to spin the wheel.
Okay, so the way this works, if this is your first time ever listening to this show, well, this is only my second time ever doing this, but I put together a wheel that is the MAGIC acronym, M-A-G-I-C, M, motivate, A, assess, G, get out there, I, integrate, and C, stay calm. I know, doesn't start with a C. But, so I'm going to spin this wheel, and whatever it lands on, you got to tell me what that word means to you. And ready, set. Oh no, did it just go out on me? I clicked on the ad off to the side. There we go.
All right, I'm ready, Kevin. I'm so excited. What letter? What's it going to be?
Motivate.
Motivate. What does motivate mean to me?
Yeah.
You know, if I have to think about the word motivation, I have to be motivating to my students, but at some point my students have to become self-motivated. You know, it's much like as a parent, you try to teach and instruct your kids and you're protecting them from, you know, putting their hand on a hot stove, but eventually they have to learn to be able to not put their hand on the stove themselves. Same thing with a kid and motivation. We have to help our kids get past always waiting until the teacher tells them to do something. In a STEM or a technology classroom, maybe that looks like just trying something new, taking the initiative to, you know, I'm interested in coding and last month was the hour of code, but I'm going to keep coding because I really liked it and I want to learn more. Or maybe we did a project with Mr. Rennetman and I want to do like a next level project. So I'm gonna ask my teacher, what could I do now? What could I do next step? Because those kinds of skills that a kid can have, that motivation skill, really makes a big difference when they go out on their own, when they have to, you know, self-advocate for themselves in a job interview, when they start a job and they have to be motivated to, you know, maybe not like work, you know, 70 or 80 hour weeks to get ahead, but to work smarter, to say, I'm going to learn something extra in my spare time to make me more useful, more necessary for my employer, you know, and maybe then it allows them to be able to step out and do things on their own as well. Side things like, you know, starting their own podcast like Kevin and I. So how's that? Is that a good answer for motivate?
I absolutely love that. Okay. My spin on it is motivating yourself and your students. I've got a background in coaching.
Yeah.
I coached wrestling for 10 years.
Yeah.
Coached esports now. That's been a trip, awesome. As well as golf and baseball in the back and in the past too. And, you know, with those, you're always focusing on setting goals and motivating your team to come together and accomplish things. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why we shouldn't be doing that in a classroom as well.
Yeah.
You know, work with those kids on the first day to, what is it that you personally want to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also goes back to what we were talking about earlier, helping them find their why. Mm-hmm. What is it that they're passionate about?
Yeah.
You know, if we can get them a foot up before they go and spend $100,000 on a college education, if we can help them find what their passion is prior to that, so they don't go to school another time for that what they actually enjoy doing. That's something I'd really like to see more of is, you know, that's tough for an 18-year-old kid to know exactly what they want to do in their life.
I'm sure we both knew what we wanted to do, right, Kevin?
Right. I mean, I lucked out. I knew I wanted to be in wrestling. I wanted to coach after I was done with the sport. And I thought to myself, well, duh, if you want to be a coach, that means you have to be a teacher, right?
Yeah.
And then going back with the whole stereotypical, yeah, I'm going to be a history teacher. So I actually went off to college to be a social studies teacher with the goal of being a wrestling coach. And then, yeah, you know, with the way my life journey went, I was working at a local retail shop working on computers. And then that ended up with, hey, we've got a position open. Would you be willing to teach computers? Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A job. Yes, please. Thank you.
That's, and, again, that's that motivation, right, Kevin?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I really lucked into it to get the position when I started. I mean, what about you? Did you go to college to be a math teacher?
I went to college to become an engineer. Specifically, I was studying chemical engineering, and I realized that I didn't want to sit in the office the whole time. I didn't want to, you know, just work for corporate profits. Nothing against corporate profits, because they do really make the world go round. But I wanted to impact kids. I ended up I worked as a camp counselor between one of my college summers. And that working with kids was just an incredible thing. And it made me realize that, hey, I've already taken a whole bunch of math classes. It would be easy to switch to become a math teacher. And then, you know, kind of, you know, you sometimes realize, wow, this person was born to be this or born to be that. I feel like I was born to be a teacher, born to just impact kids. And again, like we've been talking about today, help them find their passion, whether that's technology, whether that's STEM, whether that's reading, whether that's art, whatever it is that sparks a kid's interest, help them find a way to turn that into, you know, a career or just turn it into their side passion to do while they're doing some other job that they also enjoy. So,
that can be like the Google 20% time thing where
exactly. It
knowing that you're going to have the opportunity to do that thing you're passionate about helps you get through the things that you are not passionate about.
Yeah. Yep.
So, wow, that's awesome. Do you have any family members that were teachers as you were growing up, or is there a teacher that you had growing up that really sticks out as that was an awesome teacher that made a huge difference in my life?
I had lots of teachers that were super passionate. I remember I had some middle school teachers that had us do something called future problem solving. I really loved that. And we even kind of got to go to these competitions. And mostly, I think it's just the teachers that took the time to do something extra with us, to make class, you know, full of excitement, full of something interesting, some way to connect it to the real world. And I think that's probably what's helped motivate me to become the teacher I am today. And I think probably if most teachers really stopped and thought about the teachers that made an impact on them as they were going through school, they'd probably realize that a lot of those things that they did are the same things that they do with their kids today.
Awesome. Love hearing that type of stuff. So let's take a look here. And I've got a couple questions that I always like to ask my guests.
All right. So,
you've got over 20 years in the field. Mm-hmm. Kudos on that, sticking with it that long. That is, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Let's say you're talking to a group of pre-service teachers, these seniors in college that are getting ready to graduate this spring and go and find their first job in August.
Yeah.
What is your advice for that teacher heading into their first ever class where they are the ones in charge?
All right. I'd say number one, find out as much as you can about the kids. Ask them on the first day things like, you know, what are they most interested in? What do they want to be when they grow up? If they could do anything in their spare time, what would it be? If they had $1,000 to spend on themselves in a day, what would they do? If they had $1,000 to spend on other people in a day, what would they do with it? Just get them right away so that you're starting to learn about them, and then just keep learning about them and be open with them. Tell them the things that you're interested and passionate about. And I think all those things are going to start to build those relationships because when it really comes down to it, the relationships, the community that you build is just as important or more important than the content and the curriculum that you, those are going to be easier to teach if you've built that community in your classroom, and then just be patient. Every year is going to be better. I'm in year 20s, you know, and every year is still getting better as I'm still learning new things. You're going to keep learning and keep getting better. And then the last thing I'd tell you, any new teacher, this is the best job. This really is the best job that you can ever do. And it's, I think, one of the most important jobs in the world.
And I was very, very fortunate to have Chris do a Zoom call in with one of my college university classes mm-hmm. that I teach a few weeks back. Well, I guess it was probably a month or so ago. Yeah. And one of the things you did that really, really impressed me, granted it wasn't that many kids, but you were able to memorize their names at what felt like under 10 seconds. Yeah. That is something I personally struggle with. I don't know what it is about my memory, but I struggle to learn names right away. But I think that makes such a huge difference with starting, like you were talking about, building that rapport right off the bat from the first day. If you can't call on them by name, it's hard to have a connection with them. So
it is. And it's going to take a little bit of time and it's, you know, but it's worth it. And especially ask them, you know, hey, do you want me to call you Chris or Christopher, you know, or, you know, pronounce your name for me, you know, really, really give them that respect as well.
Yeah. And I've heard some people say, okay, as they're saying their name, look above their head and start drawing their name in your head. I've tried that one in the past. That doesn't always work for me. I just have to find a way to, it's a repetition thing for me.
Isn't it?
Yep. Over and over and over again.
Yep. I always take attendance, you know, and like really look at their name, you know, every day for the first 2 weeks, you know, just really each and every day, right away, make sure that I'm taking attendance, getting their names, getting it stuck in my head. So
if anyone listening is one of my former students and I didn't know your name for the first couple of weeks, I apologize. Believe me, I was trying my darndest.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, so on the flip side of things, it's December 21st as we're recording this. We're heading into the second semester of the school year. So what about that teacher down the hall? Oh, you haven't been in the hallways yet this school year.
No.
Ouch.
But that's okay. You know, even as we're talking about motivation earlier, I was thinking about this too. We have to be educators that are motivated when we're teaching remotely, and we have to try to figure out ways to build that motivation with kids when they're sitting at home doing remote learning. But also collaboration still should and can be going on, even though we're not, you know, necessarily walk down the hallway and have a conversation with another teacher. You know, we can still be sharing ideas all the time, and we always should. If I come across a great project that's STEM focused, but it connects with something that the art teachers can do, I'm gonna send that link to my art teacher. You know, email, whatever. If I created a resource, like Kevin, you said you created those great resources, those choice boards. You know, you share them with other teachers, because anytime you can collaborate, anytime you can share. You've just made it easier and better. And again, you've made things better for kids in another classroom. You're making it more relevant when we all share these great ideas. So,
do you ever get worried that you're sharing too much? Because I don't know, maybe that's just something that I think about, like, is it going to fall on deaf ears if I keep sending this stuff out?
You know, I think educators, you know, I try not to like share everything every single day. And, right. And you can tell if a teacher is like, you know, you also don't want me stepping on their toes, like you're saying, oh, I know how you should be teaching. So, you know, figure it out, you know.
Yeah. I think to myself, you know, GimKit released a Among Us game in the month of December, and the kids I was working with just absolutely loved it. My sixth graders was who I had during December there. And I told a couple of the junior high teachers about it, since they also had those same students. I'm like, yeah, these kids really love it. You can use it in your class and it helps motivate them. And then during exams, I finished up with my freshmen a little bit early and I played that game with them. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. Can you please be sure to tell all the other teachers about it? I never thought about them.
Yeah. Anything we can do. It again, just connect with your kids. Make yourself a real person to them, and you know what? They'll have a much better time learning from you.
So the final question I have for you is, if that teacher down the hallway is gearing up for retirement and they're hitting this last semester, how do you, what advice do you give to them to not just coast out, especially if they're forced to be remote like this?
I'd say probably what I say to most every teacher. If that was your kid in the classroom, how would you want the teacher to do the job of teaching, of educating? You know, for me as a teacher, every day I walk into that classroom, if I'm not giving those kids 100% of whatever I've got that day, then that's, you know, I would do that for my kids, my own personal kids. I should be doing it for other kids. They're just as important. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I completely agree with you as well there. So as we wind down this episode here, let's go back to, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to touch base with you? Where you said Amazon is where you can get the book. And are you speaking anywhere virtually or in person anytime soon?
Oh yeah. Lots of places. Again, everything can be found on my website, dailystem.com. And there's the resources tab, has those resources that you were talking about earlier, Kevin. The podcast tab has archives of episodes of my podcast. If you're looking for, you know, and other information, just contact me through there or through at Daily STEM on Twitter, mostly, also Instagram and Facebook. But I'd love to help. I'm always happy to help.
Okay. And well, I guess they're not really happening right now, but are you going to do anything like FETC or McCall or OETC, any conferences anytime soon?
Yeah, yeah. I'm one of the McCall featured speakers on one of the days, and I think I'm part of a panel for FETC that's just getting finalized right now. I'm speaking, and again, these are all remote, all virtual, for a conference in Virginia, at a PD out in West, you know, Washington. I mean, just all sorts of people. You know what? Again, everybody learning how to use Zoom has just made it opportunities great for anybody being able to share anywhere. So, and still be able to stay home with your kids. So,
which is great to have time with kids, but not necessarily while you're trying to do something.
That can be a little tricky. Yeah. And all those things are all on my website. If there's the speaking tab, that shows where I'm all at. So
congratulations on all those. Those are never easy to do. Myself, I am working on finalizing some things, so looking like I'm probably going to be presenting with FETC again this year. Great. Fingers crossed that all works out. And I hit the deadline last night for OETC, pushing send on that one. Good. I miss in-person conferences, but I don't want to be quarantined and have that. I don't want to be sick with it either. So awesome. Well, thanks so much for being on the show today. If there's anything else you'd like to share, please
it's all share. Good. I'm always happy to help, Kevin. I appreciate being on Magic Potion EDU today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And audience, as always, now it's your turn to go out there and make it happen. We'll see you the next time. Thank you for listening to the Magic Potion Podcast. This podcast was created using Anchor FM. Please subscribe and leave comments with your thoughts and ideas from the classroom. Until next time, get out there and make it happen.